Time for the pit, gotta play it, come see me. Keep getting wrecked, gotta play it on easy. Easy at the start, this game could really tease me. Gotta be careful, adapt or gonna freeze me. NG or Rage, choose one for the thrill. Level 1, rats, bats, goes for the kill. Level 2, rabbit, rat, bats, blood to spill. Shadowbox or melee, got to level up still. Play it during Christmas, get food from the garage. Play it for Thanksgiving, lots of turkey for your lunch. Watch your red health bar before a level up. And the blue bar, gotta find something for your guts.
Welcome to Kerberos Productions' intermittent podcast about our current works in progress, the video game biz in general, to anything that tickles our fancy in those spare moments between progressing and our work. Welcome to Curbstomp. Welcome, everybody, to Curbstomp, episode 3!
Yay!
I'm Chris Stewart, producer at Kerberos Productions, and I'm here with...
Aaron Demo, lead writer, producer.
Martin Sorlis, CEO and creative director.
And a live studio audience, half comprised of household pets.
Yay!
All right, jump in. Kerberos News.
Kerberos News! Kerberos News! It's time for all the news that's about Kerberos!
I'm never getting used to that. I really don't.
Awesome.
All right, so everybody's still toiling away on Kaiju Agogo.
Yep, Kaiju Agogo is entering its final month of production.
Yay!
And press. We'll be heading out to the press pretty quick here for previews and early looks. So be watching on that. I don't know, do we have any... That's kind of boring, like... Work is still progressing.
That's right.
Boring news is we're working.
We're working on it.
Yes, witness why a reality show about indie game dev doesn't go anywhere. No, but news is, where were we last night? We were on the air.
We were on the air, that's right. We were at a Space Games Junkies. I believe I got that right. Boy, I'd hate to get that wrong. Yeah, we were on Twitch TV Space Game Junkies. For live podcasting, live streaming,
yeah.
And for those of you who are not familiar with them and watching them, A, you should be, because those guys, the way they talked about games and all that, those guys play a shoot load.
They keep the faith, man.
Yeah, so definitely keep an eye on them on their Twitch feed, but don't fret, because I believe they also put it as a podcast later, so... If you're here listening to this, then you probably have some tolerance for listening to Martin and myself go on, which means, good, there's more coming as part of the podcast.
But, so you're not disappointed. They didn't let me sing on their podcast, so prepare for a letdown.
There you go.
as the fans flock to the new podcast.
Good opportunity, then, to remind people to keep an eye on our forums and our social media, facebook.com/Kerberos Productions, and Twitter at SoulForce. And then our message boards, etc., because that's where places where I'll be posting.
Yay!
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, when they put that thing live, I'll let everybody know about it there. So.
We also had a representation at Full Indie last night. Our junior designer Rowan Epp was there with Kaiju Agogo, getting it play tested, chatting, talking.
Showing it off to the Vancouver indie community.
Yes, so we were, when Kerberos was in fact in two places at once last night, so that was awesome.
That's why Lois Lane never suspects for Superman.
Yep.
I was there briefly and I saw Rowan and then had to duck out for the podcast.
He was totally working.
Rowan is the Kerberos Superman robot.
And actually, I think we've mentioned them before, Full Indie. Well, obviously not everybody's in the Vancouver area, but there's a lot of indie dev groups in most cities these days that has any sort of game dev stuff going on. If only, sometimes it's more hardcore development and what's going on business stuff, sometimes it's just social, but I'd recommend hitting meetup.com and seeing what's going on in your area if you're kind of a video game person. And
I was going to say, do they let normal, sane people?
Yeah, check your meetups. Well, I mean, the thing is like the line between, person who loves games, person who mods games, and person who makes games is increasingly becoming blurry. So if you want to take the step from one to the next step...
Well,
right,
it will be that way until the Great Culling.
Yeah, until you get to the point where, when you're noodling around with Unity and you're making your first game, this is where you show up at your first full indie, because at that point you are starting to become an indie developer, and then you can, help other people play their playtest their games.
I was about to say, yeah.
And, you know, talk to people and hear presentations about
games. You know what?
Games.
I recommend it for the Straits anyways, because I don't think there's anything that says they're keeping the to use, sounds slightly derogatory, to keep the Straits out.
To keep the mundane.
Not slightly, that was extremely. But
it's not to be derogatory, but I do have to point out that at least the Vancouver Full Indie has a waiting list very often, even for all the people who actually are developing games.
Yeah.
So there are better opportunities. If you just play games and you want to interact with game developers, there are opportunities for that. There are conferences for that. There are, you know, like, conventions for that. There's PAX for that. You know, there's a lot of places where you can meet and greet your indie developers.
But the long and the short of it is if you're interested in this stuff, get your feet wet, because I don't think anybody who makes anything creatively, from video games to movies to books, whatever, would ever say that the people that consume their stuff shouldn't learn more about how it gets made, just to get a better understanding, because I think a lot of people take stuff for granted about.
Yeah, once you know how the sausage is made, I think it does sort of change your attitude to some degree. It's just a little information can sometimes, you know, be a bad thing. It's like there are every time people get an inside view of what the game development industry is like, I tend to find that like their first reaction is disbelief and horror. Earlier this week, there was an article on Kotaku about standard industry layoffs, right? Which you definitely should go read if you care about game development and you care about game developers at any level of development.
Sorry, have we segued into game news?
I was about to say, is there anything we want to cover Kerberos-wise, and then we'll switch back to this?
That was pretty Kerberos-y. I think we got it all covered.
Okay, then
we're working on Kaiju Gogo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's enjoying Necromancer.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
And we did a new. You guys did a new podcast.
And we did a new podcast.
Yeah, we took Kaiju Gogo out to a full indie.
Okay.
Had dinner, a few drinks.
That's right.
Slept a bit.
Okay. Quiet.
Industry news. This is where we discuss the things that aren't us but have something to do with gaming.
Go for it. Da da.
And I don't think we made any reference to it, but I dropped it in at the beginning of last episode. Right at the very beginning, a taste of what has stuck in Martin's mind for the better part of 15 years now. 99p Challenge was a British radio panel game.
Do not explain this insanity.
Why not?
You need to explain the insanity.
I need to at least know, give props to.
No one can know the mind of
Mechtron
unless it is explained.
The 99p Challenge. All of them are up on iTunes and probably on YouTube. And it's hilarious, good fun. So
yeah, super funny. And Simon Pegg.
99p Challenge. This is
If you're
between this and Nightvale, this is the model for the perfect podcast in our minds. And now for the weather.
Do not go into the dog park.
Dogs are not allowed in the dog park.
People are not allowed in the dog park.
Well, so that's for the what we're listening to thing. We're really skipping around badly here.
We have no discipline.
Oh, God. Okay, let's quickly.
Okay, gaming industry
gaming
news.
Gaming industry news.
Gaming industry news.
So Kotaku are
musical update. Industry news still.
Kotaku, so I did bring this up previously. Yeah. Forgive my lack of discipline.
Structure. Poorly structured.
My lack of respect for the boundaries, man. I'm coloring outside the lines. Cool article on Kotaku. Very heartbreaking in some cases. Where developers who sometimes, you know, have had several gigs in the industry are reporting what the experience of working in the industry is like as an artist, as a programmer, just as a dev in general. And especially working for bigger companies. There's a lot of reasons why a lot of people are going indie nowadays, and it's not for the money, right? It's for stability, respect, control, the sense of control over your own life in a lot of cases. It means a lot. So if you go, you know, I definitely would recommend that you go read that article. I think it was Jason Schreiber that wrote it, but I can't say for sure. It's on Kotaku. I think it came out on the 12th.
I will make sure I find out what it is off you, and I will add it both in the show notes and on the
I'm going to try and link
the
to forms. That. But this is the kind of thing that, you know, if you care about your developers, and obviously if you're listening to this podcast, you do.
Or you're just lonely.
Or you're just very, very lonely. This is the sort of thing that you should be reading, right? This is what they're going through. This is what life is like. This is what it's like to try and pursue the career seriously with big publishers and, you know, high-profile development houses. It's not fun, you know. You can say you're living the dream, but very few people are living the dream that is in your head. They're living a very different dream.
I think to be far-reaching about this, I think there's, if you look at this article and various other things, there's clear signs that the old school way of doing things is entering a highly unstable phase. I think it is fair to say that the giant publishers in the industry and the giant games are functioning at the level of the guy who's jumped out of the 30th story of an office building. And as he passes the 15th floor, you yell, "Are you okay?" And he yells back, "Fine so far." Right? Because ignoring some massive flaws in their business models that are just being fueled by momentum at this point.
To a degree, but naked sociopathy is not a business model. Right? Like, the things that people in management can get away with in the game development industry because their employees are bound by NDAs that keep them from talking are sometimes unbelievable. Pizza parties where everybody is laid off at the end of it. Yeah. People who dump their entire staff so that they can collect their Christmas bonuses. Right? This is the kind of crap that you can get away with in an industry where, you know, regulations always favor management and, you know, the corporate high staff.
It's
and they
also
never
the type
protect,
of thing, yeah.
Like the workers, right? It's not a good situation. And so, like, you know, we'll never know which companies did this, but we just know it happened. And in general, just don't be surprised when a lot of the developers that you care about go indie. Because
but on all sides of this equation, it's also the type of things that begins to run rampant when things are bad. Right. When things are good, people tend to just be dicks at a normal level. When they feel pinched, management feels justified in doing the most outrageous things. Because I've sat in at management meetings where they discuss denying people the right to go see their doctor. Right? That doesn't come up when everything's on schedule. That comes up when management is panicking.
I was reading about one just the other day. It wasn't gaming development, but this is just business in general, where they made the announcement to the staff that they had to take their time card and punch out when they went to the bathroom and then punch back in for after the bathroom, to which the guy was all bummed. And 1,000,001 people said, "That's illegal. They don't get to do that."
Exactly. The meeting I was at about the 9 people going to the doctor rights was one sane voice on the management board went, "That's illegal, so yeah, we're not going to do it."
I'm sorry, sir, that's illegal.
Yeah.
And broadly speaking, if you're following Kotaku or, you know, the other surviving game journalism websites, and you tend to find somebody that's doing the business side stuff, make a note of their name. In this Facebook-y world, we kind of passively take what comes at us or just rolls along in, like, the post feed sort of thing. But it's not a bad idea, you know, amidst the meme pictures and the funny little Japanese videos and stuff like that, to keep an eye on the guy who is still, you know, digging deep and maintaining contacts and reporting.
Yeah, a lot of work has been done to eliminate the journalist as a person, as an individual, as a name, as a face in the modern world. So we tend to think, you know, we tend to even in normal conversation to say, Kotaku wrote, right? No, Kotaku doesn't write anything. Right, Kotaku employs a great number of freelance writers and editors who write things, and some of them have merit, and maybe some of them don't. So, like, when you find somebody who's writing good stuff and who's willing to dig into hard stories, or was willing to, you know, go to the wall and publish things that are, you know, maybe don't, maybe are a little controversial, or, you know, just nobody else is willing to touch, that person probably has a name, and that name should probably be remembered so that you can keep an eye on them and see what they're writing.
Well, and their job, like everything else on the internet, is driven by the amount of traffic they get, too. So if you like the guys, you know, if you've ever complained to yourself, "Oh, journalism sucks," well, find the guy that's doing it the way you like it and make sure everybody you can get reads it.
And use that damn comment section for what it's supposed to be for instead of just arguing.
If you can find it in your heart to use a comment section for a thumbs up rather than, you know, to publish the latest chapter of Mein Kampf or whatever it is that the average commenter is working on, that would be great, because more positive comments, less negative, more...
That does get noted.
More valid comments, less the growls and snarls of Morlocks would be great in any comment section. Right.
It's the, what was the shampoo commercial, because we're old people, the I Told Two Friends?
Oh, God, yeah.
Wasn't Head and Shoulders, though. I don't know. I told two friends, and they told two friends.
You know what? Stop. Just.
Do you want me to sing the song?
You never drink a second cup of coffee
there
at home.
There was a jingle to it, if I can just remember it. But no, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, it's kind of important. If you like it, share it with your friends. Because if you share it with 10 people, but only two, then reshare it to their 10 people, but only two, whatever, it spreads out.
This actually segues into something I wanted to talk about this week as far as the industry goes. And people's feedback. That gamers in general and the gaming society in general needs to recalibrate its anger/reward settings. So in my tons of spare time this week, I was kind of farting around looking at two games that I had gotten ages ago.
I'm just going to point out, you guys have horribly ruined the entire format.
Is this somewhat a segue into what we're playing?
No, it's actually about people's industry.
Okay, so we're still in the industry.
We're still in the industry.
Yes, it just has to be about the games, because otherwise I'm just talking about, I imagine how people, no.
There's a context. So the context is, Martin was looking at some games.
I was looking at some games I had picked up a while ago on, what do you call it when the game's not finished yet?
Early access?
Early access. And games one of them over either. The past year had handled its early access really poorly. Slow updates, not very much communication. And their area was filled with rage and anger, as possibly it should be. Then the other game I was looking at had handled their pre-release stuff really well. Lots of communication, lots of updates, lots of taking advice. Generally being very skillful and giving people their money's worth for getting the game early. And they got a little bit of love and kisses over it. I think as the industry swings even more indie, this is an important factor. Something has to start to shift in terms of both in the media and in player response of more rewards balance out against the abuse. So right now, a negative event will generate 10x, and a positive event will generate 2x of responses and attention, that sort of thing. That really doesn't make it very useful to do the right thing or to do the good thing, or even to be profitable doing that. While we still have major gaming sites who are thrilled to post lists of failures and that sort of thing, which is good, they do not publish top 10 lists of people who honored their commitments, games that pre-released really well. They just maybe covered that in the review, but there's no...
Who did
no
early access right?
There's no...
There's a story there.
Right, yeah. There's no, hey, kids, this company really honors its commitments. You should pay attention to them. And so it's like, hey, kids, that company's a douche. And dead silence on the other end of things.
We talked about this a little bit last time, too, and I think the important thing is that in a time when nobody has a set idea or there's no consensus on what early access is supposed to be like, if a model of it comes out that you do like,
yeah, sure,
you got to say something.
It's not just
validate that, please.
That
if
helps,
somebody
that
does
helps
it right in your
model.
Opinion, they deserve, you know, if there are any journalists listening to this, if there's somebody out there doing early access right, and they deserve some
but it,
validation.
But it's bigger than
that.
Early access. It's early access. It's Kickstarter. It's even just product support.
Yeah. Who did Kickstarter right? Who did it wrong?
Who did it wrong, right?
Like, that sort of stuff needs to be discussed more often. It's not just a word-of-mouth issue, right? A lot of game journalism right now really seems to be very much confined to the pom-pom waving and cheerleading for very specific projects without, you know, enough just analysis and, you know, reviewing of games and... you know, forming a continuity of their coverage, right? This is one of the things that, like, the old gaming websites and gaming magazines used to do right. There was a continuity, a continuum of engagement with the product. So a standard magazine back in ye olden days when dinosaurs roamed the earth would do a preview of a game, right? They'd look at it in alpha or whatever.
She represents big paleo.
They would do...
she called you a dinosaur.
They would do... a review of the game, right? They might do, you know, like tips and a walkthrough of the game, and the game would then end up getting analyzed in year roundups and things like that if it was, you know, worth if it was an exceptional flop or an exceptional hit or whatever. And that process of just kind of grinding and gristing on things produced like a pretty literate audience and a pretty accountable industry. Right.
The bottom line is that both Aaron and I have done the job from the other side of the fence. It is big fun and relatively easy to write a negative review. But again, in days of old, we also took pains to give shout outs for people doing stuff right and to drive attention and, you know, in that eventually sales to people who were doing things right. And instead, now we kind of have a world, you know, don't get me wrong, the Yahtzee thing, really funny, but that's all anybody wants to be anymore, right? That's all anybody wants to post in comment section. It's that or the weird bandwagon thing, right? When it becomes a thing to be in favor of something, then that happens. But like I said, the future of your hobby is going to depend more and more on people doing things for the love of it as opposed to getting hugely rich or because their corporate masters have told them to do it. And those people need,
a little more humane treatment and a little more sanity in our environment.
And just support, right? Both physical and emotional. Okay. That was the...
Okay.
We, in this screwed up format that you guys have completely derailed here...
We've ruined everything.
We didn't do questions.
We haven't gotten to questions yet. We will do questions.
We do them as part of Kerberos at the beginning.
You know what, man? Sometimes you just mix it up.
This is three episodes. This whole format should be a complete lock by now.
Fascist. Crypto fascist.
Producer.
Same difference.
Oh, God.
Okay. So
I really wish I had really editorial control on this. Oh, wait! I do!
He's going to mute us. He's going to mute us. Help us.
Wait for it. Okay. So, do you have a little song for questions?
Of course. Dude, there's been three episodes.
Well, step on up to the mic, mister. It's your karaoke party.
Viewer mail. It's viewer mail. Though they're not viewing, they're really just listening. So it's listener mail. Yeah.
I should really get that recorded as a drop-in.
It's a meme.
Okay. I'll go first. Lord Geck. Greetings, Lord. Asked last time, and we never got to his question, what happens if a character, this is in the pit, loses critical starting gear, such as the Leer's Moisture Suit or the new Necromancer's Life Force Draining Dagger? Not all players have critical gear. I think there's just the...
Critical gear is just an interesting option. That's a...
Specialized gear?
They start with cool stuff. Everybody starts with cool stuff. And everything
there... But the Leer can't without the moisture suit.
To cut to the chase, everything every player starts with is in the distribution list somewhere.
Yeah, right. I was just trying to delineate between the ones with the special mechanisms of play challenge, right?
Like, most people take off the moisture suit for the first, 12 levels, right?
No, so they don't. Do they?
Yeah, they do.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Leet guys do all sorts of crazy stuff.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Leet?
Leet.
Leet pit divers.
I take off my moisture suit, man.
That's right.
But no, to answer the question, if that wasn't clear, yes, they could be refound. So if something bad happens, your kid brother starts up your game and drops it, then wanders down a couple of levels.
Wanders through a item destruction
draft. Your run's not horribly ruined. You can still find that stuff again. But again, it is part of the...
well, it's relatively rare. Right?
Yeah. And
I'll be hearing from the Leer rights people about their lack of representation, okay? Get over it, dolphins.
So it is in the distribution table.
There's one playable dolphin. What do you want?
Exactly. You're a minority, fish guys.
It is in the distribution table.
That's right. I called you fish on purpose because I know it makes you angry.
And the game hates you. So interpret that as you will.
Let's be fair. The game is very egalitarian. It hates everyone.
It hates everyone. Yeah.
The system administrator wants you to die, does not care about your creed, color, shape, gender, anything.
My windshield wipers?
No, you have the message board questions.
Oh, why don't you say that?
Well, I was trying to be all radio and point.
Dude,
instead of talking
it
on the mic.
It looked like your windshield wipers were broken.
If I tap my nose, it means ask your questions.
It means you're drunk again. Okay. Little Johnny Bluesmet wants to know if there'll be another SOTS game in the future. And since there's already been two other SOTS games, I'm assuming he means SOTS as in full-on Space 4X games. Yes, the answer is yes, there will be someday.
I'm going to piggyback a question by Excellion30.
And yes, we own the IP utterly.
At Excellion36 asked a similar question. He wanted to know about further episodes in the SOTS universe.
In the SOTS 4X universe.
The 4X universe.
Yes, there will be something. Those are just very big projects, and they need very big support. And we're very indie these days, so it is a stepping stone towards that.
Everything is about scope and funding. That's all. But it exists on paper. For the moment, Martin's head.
It would blow your minds.
Mind's blown! It blew mine initially, but I'm kind of bored of it now.
That's right.
I'm over it.
Okay, ask your next question.
And this is Only Phoenix at @E4_OnlyPhoenix. It was a twofer talking about pit bosses. And we kind of touched on it before, but were there ever any plans to add new bosses to the game? And what is the process you go through when designing and balancing a new character for the pit? Which we did kind of touch on, because we were talking about how there was the flexibility to create these characters like the Necromancer and all that have different drives.
So we're talking about a playable character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since I don't remember any podcast, I assume they don't remember either. So let's just answer it.
Okay, so let's just answer it.
So what was his question in exact detail before you ramble?
Were there ever any plans to add new bosses
right
to the game?
Yeah.
I mean, not that the game's boss heavy, but there's the hyper...
there's the odd boss.
There's the odd ones. I mean, I'm going to say a lot of people
bosses. They're not bosses in the classical sense.
They're not bosses in classic sense, because to be honest, I don't like bosses. I've never liked them, right? I like cool, powerful characters that you bump into, but I don't think I have it in me to design a giant monster that's completely invulnerable unless you kick it in the knee on an alternate Thursday while the sun is shining in its eyes, and then it pops open a panel where you can scratch it under the chin and it giggles, and then its bowels come out. And you can kill it. That's not what I'm ever going to do, because it's not my thing. So
unlike the infamous game Happy Bowel Monster, which I know was very popular and all of you very much enjoyed. Actually, we will not be making a Happy Bowel Monster clone. But
the thing about the knee comes from an actual game I played, so just don't. So my idea of a boss monster is the Zul and his coterie at the end, right? They're just tough and kind of scary for most players. That's my idea of a boss, right? I don't do trick bosses. The pit too will have more nuanced leader characters in it that can be seen as bosses, which is cool, and they'll do cool things. But there won't be a lot of gimmicky ones. I don't like gimmicky bosses.
And then what's the process when you guys come up with new ones?
Play.
It is as simple as design-wise, you know what the hook is.
The process is
to the character.
We think about it, we work out all his implications, mechanics. Like we worked out, Aaron and I worked out he doesn't feed, right? Normally on food, he smears the holes over himself, and she.
I think it's fair actually to point out that like the origin of some of the player characters is, I have this awesome idea, and somebody on the creative, in this case, like, I think it was John Yakima who had the first.
John.
I have this awesome idea, and he brought us, what amounts to a really well-designed character. Like, it just had an awesome look to it. It had some cool lore character design tie-ins, and he had some cool ideas of things that would go with it, and, then he'd pitched us the softball, and from a design perspective or a lore perspective, then we want to hit it out of the park.
Yeah, generally it goes through the lore gauntlet first. Once it passes through that, then it goes through my mechanics gauntlet to make sure the stuff that is cool still works out as a game, because in the end, it's a game and it has to work.
It has to be playable.
Then that goes through program and we get all those special abilities in. And then I set its initial values, which is the initial ballpark, which is probably anywhere between 60 and 80% accurate. And then we play. And that pretty much boosts it to probably 90%. And we play it to the point, and I play it to the point where I'm satisfied I can win the game with the character. Then it goes out in the wild, and then we listen to a lot of feedback.
Then we see if Tornus can break it.
That's right. You break it in seconds.
And then that gets us the last 5%.
And just general, right? Like, I like to see what everybody's talking about both good and bad. You know, I walk through, I'm amused by the, ah, he's underpowered, ah, he's overpowered, ah. And then that averages out, and then I see that, because no one's ever going to play the game exactly like I do, so, you know, then I do some tuning afterwards, and then we release an update, like we just did the other day.
That's right. Is there a rough estimate in your head what the difference is between the whole game mechanics where you're kind of virtually thinking through how it plays in your head and then the actual playtesting of it to see what worked and didn't work or surprises that weren't accounted for?
Oh, how much humility do I have to pretend for this part?
I don't know. Make something up.
Okay. I'm always surprised by how it works out because it don't...
But you describe there is a balance because you know the game so well that you know you can kind of project, and all designers when they know their game can project forward through implications of certain things.
Yeah, it's been 2 years with the pit. I'm pretty clear most often when things aren't going to work off the bat or when they'll be scary overpowered. But once it actually enters into the world, then there's all sorts of synergies that you can never predict.
So about 75% is the advance, thinking it through. Then it's 75 to 90-ish with the playtesting.
So the wacky door thing that some kids are doing with the necromancer.
Yeah.
Right, the lich running between the two
trap
doors.
Describe it for those who might not
have. No, I refuse to.
Okay.
Also, I can't. One of them is the health door, and I can't remember what the other one is.
There's some sort of wacky exploit that you can use.
Booster door, right?
You can use if you find two traps that are close enough together. Or
right, like that's a synergy that will almost never come to mind on paper.
Yeah.
Right? And for that one, since it takes like 12 hours to do it, it's just like, I think that self-balances because that's 12 hours of your life you won't get back.
Plus, it's not like you can stay tethered to the floor forever. You got to keep moving, right?
Oh, so. No. They can just sit there and go between the things, right? But it takes forever, right?
I know, yeah.
So it's just like 12 hours to get 100 psionic characters. Like, okay, that's its own balance, right? Like, I'm not going to shut that door.
You spent 12 hours playing, and you've got a cool character now. Okay.
Congrats, you know. Like, if this was a competitive shooter, sure, that would be a factor.
Something would have to be,
right? But in a single-player experience, it's your single-player experience.
It's rare to run into, and then you got to invest an annoying amount of time to run it.
So you know what? Exploit,
that self-balance is quite nicely.
It's between you and your OCD medication, right? So,
Given
that this is a game where
people
complain about how much the random number generator hates them in the first place, to run into that, you know what? With our blessings, there you go.
Finally, the random number generator loves you.
Yeah. I mean, my only concern with some stuff is I'll read somebody's like, I'm always starving with this character. I'm just like, oh, crap. You know, so I'll look at it and I'll play through it. Oh, like, that might be a problem, right? Yeah. So I look. And then it's like, you know, again, to reflect because I'm watching House these days, it's like, are you telling me everything you're doing? Yes. Are you lying? Maybe. Right? So it's just like,
have you been eating rat poison?
That's right. Or is it lupus? And then you find out that their normal style of play is to do every single thing and to practice their silence and to punch the wall for 200 rounds to get their melee up and stuff.
Right.
And just like,
and then they
This is why you're starving and that you need to not do that with this particular character.
As in real life, you may want to go and hunt for food occasionally.
Yeah. Well, just whatever, right? Like sometimes you get to the bottom of its failure. It's not adapting play style, right? Then it's like, okay, fine.
Yeah, we do. Like this covers one of the questions that Apprentice asked about. Joey Apprentice asked about what the player reactions were to the Necromancer. Right, there was a bit of oh my god, overpowered. Oh my god, no, not so much.
Yeah, they settled down to not so much, and I think players had a point that he was a little overpunished on initial skills, right? And his food smearing wasn't quite effective enough.
Food smearing. You need to be able to picture this. This is the process by which the lich eats by smearing food all over his body and absorbing mass.
He's not eating. He's repairing holes. And that's
I said, he's just like, it's like, you know what you might do with a piece of meat is like put it in your mouth and digest it. The lich just sort of like pats it into one of the holes.
Yeah. Food as spackle.
Yeah, exactly. I see the lich coming out of an encounter with a security bot with like a big gaping hole in his chest. He takes like a cheeseburger out, grinds it into the hole till it evens out, and then it slowly turns gray. And
this is why you never invite the necromancer to tap.
Ah,
right.
Much better.
Horrifying.
Speaking of Joey App, who seems lonely and asked many questions.
Many questions.
Yes, he asked if we learned anything from Necromancer release. It's like, dude, that's like, what, the 72,000th thing we've released for the pit? There's nothing left.
It's not the 72,000th. It's only the 71,000th.
Our DLCs have all been kind of the same.
It's smooth by this point.
Yeah, we're pretty.
That is a... In fact, that's what makes it sad to eventually let a game, you know, development-wise, come to an end. Because it's like, oh, but we've got it down to a science. Let's just keep making more stuff for it. But... Yeah. Eventually you have to move on.
Eventually you have to move on and do another game.
Yeah. And he wonders if there's going to be Easter eggs in Kaiju. If Easter eggs you mean buildings that you recognize from your hometown, yes.
There'll be Very possibly. Those.
And there'll be some buildings that are more interesting or fun to step on than others. Like some crazy woman might have made us put a fireworks factory in the game. Right? So... Wackiness Whee! Could ensue. Right? I have no idea who that crazy woman would be.
Can't possibly be because I enjoy blowing things up.
That's right.
Well, anybody who's ever played our games knows that all the stuff we love in all sorts of genre areas tends to leak into the stuff we make.
Right? Yeah.
Our little loves tend to Easter egg their way into every game we've made so far.
Yeah, and it's not quite Easter egg, but speaking of boss monsters, the champion defender unit of each zone should be Easter eggy enough for people when they're
a little Easter eggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and keep your eye on the cities. There'll be lots of fun stuff.
Okay. <there.
laughs> I have a couple of questions. Somebody asked.
Somebody? Don't they have a name?
Little Joey Apprentice, who asks a lot of questions.
Because he's needy.
Asks about the floor tiles in the pit, which are attributed to Kenley. This is a question from the Premium Lore Book. He has the PDF of it, which you can get through my Patreon campaign. And he wants to know if the floor tile art is still visible in the current pit version of the pit, and what floors it can appear on. I'm not sure even Ken could tell you that, because, as we all know, the floors of the pit are procedurally generated. He also does so much art, particularly both 2D and 3D and skewed 3D and whatever, logos and, you know, icons, and in the course of any given month or year, that I think if he allowed that stuff to remain in memory, it would overload him and he would explode. Is it still visible in the pit? Absolutely. Right. I don't think there's any, like, nothing has been replaced, right?
The pit is still the pit.
Things might have been modified slightly, but yeah, of course, his art is still there.
Games are pretty group effort-y, so.
Yeah, as I said, he's still in there.
I have a sneaking suspicion, because I seem to recall rifling through the repository looking for stuff, that I've tripped over early day legacy elements of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're not built into the final product, so I don't think you can see them anywhere, even if you went.
As I said, if he did floor tiles for the pit, and I'm sure that they're still there.
But they're all there somewhere.
Everybody's floor tiles are still in the pit, because the pit is still the pit. No matter how many times we expand it, we don't re-linoleum all the floors of the pit generally when we're expanding it. Usually we're focused on playable characters and more monsters and interesting mechanics, and replacing the floor tiles is not high on our priority list. So he's still in there, and the floors are still in there. And yes, if you want a PDF of the Grand Premium Lord book, you can get it through my Patreon campaign, and there should be very soon good news along the Premium Lore book front. But I'm not going to announce it until it's a done deal.
Books are involved.
Books are involved.
They're very involved. But if you have a look at the PDF... And you can't imagine there's a physical form. It's impressive.
Yes, there's one more question for me. At least that I know of.
Is it from you or is it from Apprentice? Are you covering for Apprentice?
I can't remember who asked it. It was about. It was actually not posted in the post questions for episodes here thread, which is really, if you go to our forums and go to the curb stomp little area, there's a great place called post questions for episodes here. This is where you post them, and then we will all get your questions, and you can ask them to individual people, and yada yada. But somewhere elsewhere in the world, I think it was on another thread on the forums, somebody asked about my upcoming panel on women in gaming at NorwestCon in the first weekend of April. And the answer to that is my entire appearance schedule at NorwestCon is posted to my website. under public appearances, and you can find out all the panels I'm going to be on and exactly when they are. I believe that this particular panel is on Saturday at about 2 p.m. So that answers that question.
Yeah. Fan fiction?
Oh, and you were asked about fan fiction.
Again, I can't. Unfortunately, I can't track down who asked this question. There was a question about fan fiction and its legality. Fan fiction that is set in the Sword of the Stars universe, I have a general, within the bounds of legality, blanket permission to anyone to write fan fiction that is set in the Sword of the Stars universe. Where it ends is don't get paid for it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Do not violate our IP rights and copyright, please.
Do not get paid for it, and please don't try and pass it off as official. That's basically
it. Yeah. Please don't pass it off as official. Like, acknowledge that it's fan fiction. We have an entire forum for fan fiction on the Kerberos forums. It's, you know, it's welcomed and encouraged. I think the only other question that is a frequently asked question about fan fiction is, will I read it? Or comment on it, or things like that. And my general, again, blanket answer to that, to protect you and myself, is no. And the reason why is because every science fiction writer that I've known or know about who's had too close of an interaction with the fan fiction community, it has gone poorly for one or both parties. It's just a gray, messy legal area for me to get into a situation where I can be, you know, exploiting any of your ideas. So unless you actually, support one of our game campaigns to insert a character into the Sword of the Stars universe, that's sometimes a perk that we offer in crowdfunding or things like that, you know, where you can, you know, directly interact with me as part of the lore and stay within our IP and stuff like that. That's totally kosher, and we're both protected under those circumstances. But otherwise, yeah, I can't be reading your fan fiction. That's not healthy for either one of us.
That's quite common at a number of levels. At least a couple of times a year, somebody emails the company with their bright idea for a game.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately have to go, I saw from the first sentence that you're trying to pitch me a game. I am just letting you know I am deleting this now and walking away.
I can't.
And people have to understand, it's not that we don't like your enthusiasm, and it's not that we wouldn't like your ideas if we read them. It's just, this is what we do for a living, and if you like pitch us some idea and then we do something similar having not read your thing, well, then you feel like we ripped you off.
No one wants you to feel that way, and we don't want you to like not make your games. If you have ideas for games, please make games. I do try to encourage and support, you know, people who happen to be fans of our games and the games that we've made over the course of a whole career, and who are inspired by it or who list us as influences and things like that. And that's fantastic. Thank you very much. Really appreciate the knowledge that the creative energy that we've put into to games over the years have inspired other people to create. That's wonderful. We have no desire to rip you off at all. So, yeah, please don't throw your babies in front of the carriage.
I want to quickly then jump in just 15 seconds, and then we'll move to the last thing here, producer's prerogative here, that I also get emails from people asking about, can I, so over the years, mod my PC case with art elements from your games? Can I, make a bumper sticker for my car or whatever? It's like, go for it. Again, don't sell it.
Yeah, don't sell it, but otherwise...
But we love it that you love it.
Please don't get paid, but other than that, do what makes you happy, because we love you for it.
And we've posted on our website...
Though I do frown on Sots Loves Hitler bumper stickers. Please, none of those.
Yeah, no hate crimes, please, attached to us. There is a blanket thing, too, that we've said for people who do Let's Plays and streams and stuff like that. Because a lot of these people on YouTube or on Twitch actually are generating money from their followers.
Absolutely.
And we've done it okay with that.
That's a blanket permission.
It's a blanket permission. It amounts to, if you're recording your streams and then somewhere along the line you you know, turn it into the sort of the Stars primetime television hour. Mm. No, don't. No.
Yeah, that's not allowed.
But if you want to throw a SOTS theme cosplay roller disco party,
go for it.
You know,
if you want to play it on your,
we would like pictures. Okay.
If you want to show your walkthrough on YouTube, if you want to, that's fine. Just turn on the thing. We understand that, you know, it took you some time to do it, generate a little cash to share it with other people.
Yeah, you know, and if you're doing a thing, you know, add me on Twitter and mention that you're doing it.
Yeah, for the love of God, don't hide from us.
And add SolForce on Twitter and let us know you're doing it so that, you know, we can enjoy what you do.
And more to the point, share it with everybody else who loves the stuff,
like
too.
Like I said, if you're doing something creative, like, you know, somebody's I love it when I run into somebody who's, you know, been commissioned to do a fan art for somebody. Again, this is kind of a blanket permission. You're creating original art. Yeah, it's based on the IP of my universe. The general overall thing is, it is not in anyone's best interest to deny you the right to doodle things for people who love our IP and our games.
At a cottage level, it's fine. I think that the main problem is when you start mass producing.
Yeah, like I said.
Don't mass
On the other
produce.
Hand, if you're a major corporation in China, no, you don't have permission.
Actually, if you're a major corporation in China that wants to mass produce our stuff, please come talk to
us. Yeah, so you're going to have to sign an agreement with us, a franchise agreement. But we're happy to sign it.
Aaron, plug your ears because it's time for... TV shows we're watching. What kind of shows we watch? It's TV. We watch it. Also, sometimes movies. Stuff.
What we forgot last time.
What did we forget last time?
Gallivant.
What?
Gallivant. You haven't even watched it, speaking of singing.
No. What?
Gallivant.
Gallivant is the weird bastard child of the Spamalot musical and Joss's musical episodes. It's a half hour... Damsel Knight parody comedy show musical.
I call it Game of Glee.
Game of Glee. I was about to say.
Yeah.
Glee for nerds?
Yeah.
So it's on Netflix?
Glee of Thrones.
No, Glee was on ABC, and ABC still has it up on their website. So if it's one of their mid-season replacements, like Agent Carter.
It's a very cute, very funny little show.
Yeah, they only did 8 episodes of it, but it is wonderfully funny.
I was a little on the fence with it. I wasn't really sure the humor was working for me until the joust scene. They had me at the joust scene. After that, I was sold.
I was sold at the point where a dude looked into the queen, looked at the queen singing, "There's something scary behind your cold dead eyes."
But maybe you're not the worst thing ever.
Is it doing?
Most
is it
touching
doing
love
well?
Song in the world.
I have no idea how it's doing. Right? Like I thought it was really genuinely funny. And
is it the timing? Like if Cop Rock was made today, would it do better than it did?
No. This is much funnier Cop Rock.
But police singing.
Yeah, I know. No, night singing and stuff. Like I said, it benefits. Like I said, from a world where Spamalot, you know, was a hit on Broadway.
Yeah, okay.
And Joss kind of, you know, turned nerds onto musicals.
And Glee.
Yeah, and Glee, right.
This is the perfect segue. After months of you two saying I should watch it, I finally watched Pitch Perfect.
Oh, there you go.
The classic, which I've now watched like 10 times.
I like it. I did enjoy it.
It's the anti-Glee for all intents and purposes.
Well, and it you know, it kind of reaches in and tickles my remixer heart too.
Like, oh yeah, that's why I thought you should watch it, because I thought
it's a beautiful. It's if nothing else, like, you know, it's a beautiful homage to the art of arrangement. Right?
Yes,
as a musical skill.
Yes, and for once, the remixing in a movie about remixing is not awful. It was actually clever and smart.
What movie was it awful in?
That's right. Remix.
So I could tell you was wrong.
Remixer Dance Jive.
That was an excellent
wrong. Remixer Dance Jive is a classic. Philistine.
And Dance Jive Flashin. 2 Electric Boogaloo.
That's right. Flashin' 7.
Flashin' was okay. Hell, I even like Tougher Than Leather.
Yeah. Mixmaster Chronicles.
Leave me alone. I hate you guys.
Mixmaster
Chris. I won't make you embarrass myself. I could trap you by... stating the wrong sequel number for Bring It On and have you correct me, thus revealing that you watched them.
I've never watched the Bring It On series. I did, however, watch the Break-In series in theaters.
Oh my God.
A shame.
But anyways, yes.
Pitch Perfect. And it was kind of, it got spurred because you guys were talking about it. I knew that the Lady Fair would get a kick out of it too.
Yeah.
Yes,
just because
of
its thing. And the trailers were coming up that it did very, very well, and that they're doing a sequel.
Well, you know who produced it?
Who produced it?
The woman who played
what's his face's wife in 30 Rock, the wife who got kidnapped to Korea.
Oh, her.
Her, right? So she's a big...
She's that woman who did that.
She's a big, cool comedian chick.
Elizabeth...
Yeah.
The name blank, but I know who you're talking about now. Yeah.
And she recruited... yeah.
And I knew she was a mover and a shaker in Hollywood. Like, her... Yeah. She kind of parlayed her comedy stuff
into... She pushed that movie through, right? And then you could tell it was a cool project by the number of comedians you see in that movie doing bit parts, right? Like the guy doing...
The quartet.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like the
Donald
Canadian...
Faison.
Yeah, the Canadian dude and stuff, right?
I actually did howl with laughter with what's-his-name from... I don't know where I first ran into him, but he's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
He was the old quartet guy that was really into being beaten up.
Yes.
Hit me, please. Hit me, please.
That was fantastic.
It's okay. I've wrestled crocodiles and dingoes at the same time.
Yes, Rebel Wilson was pretty funny.
She was amazingly funny, right?
And cute and sexy.
Yep.
I'm actually kind of disappointed having seen that because she was on the line to be in the new Ghostbusters, and I wasn't familiar with her. And after watching that, I would kind of enjoy that. But
yeah, well, considering that, you can tell by a couple of the outtakes that she's got Bill Murray's penchant for improv.
Right? Yeah. Well, improv's big. Like, it just kept climbing and climbing. And
well,
this current generation of
I don't mean improv is improv theater. I mean ignoring the script.
Oh.
Ignoring the script and writing your own superior
going
movie.
For it, yeah.
That, like that thing where she goes, when the girl announces that she's got nodes, she's like, well, at least you don't have herpes. Or do you have that, too? That wasn't in the script. Like, she was just doing that. Because at the end, they showed the other clip.
Right? They're laughing.
And the reaction of everybody is, no one read that part in the script.
We're heading into the mid-season break, so I think we can just give a blanket thumbs up to the stuff we've mentioned before. Flash, Agent Carter still being awesome.
Yeah, Flash just keeps getting more fun.
More fun. But have we stumbled into anything new recently?
No, I'm kind of like trudging my way through House.
Yeah, still going through the House Marathon.
House Marathon.
Just in terms of what's in my transom, I'm searching for my copies of Yojimbo and Last Man Standing, because I want to rewatch those.
Last Man Standing, I haven't seen that in ages, but that was awesome.
It's a wonderful, wonderful remake.
And actually, that did terribly. Critics really kind of savaged that one, and they shouldn't have, because that really was really good.
I watched Magnificent Seven again, just for...
Yeah.
Excellent.
I love that movie.
This goes back to an off-mic conversation you and I had another time there, that we had both gotten tired of the gearhead antics of Top Gear UK.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to treating anything to do with fuel efficiency and electric cars.
Once they outright lied about the fault thing.
I will tell you, though, because they are the UK ones, they take them down all the time.
Yeah.
But the US Top Gear ones, not the false start one with Adam Carolla, who also bugs the hell out of me, but the three other guys that they got, they're on their third season now.
Wow.
Wow, what?
I didn't think they'd last that long.
No, third season. Well, this is the thing. They're kind of finding... The first season...
Are you trying to convey to me that it's not terrible? Is that what you're trying to convey?
I watch it, and I'm like, I see the Americanisms, especially American reality TV. Put a pin in it. I watched their electric car episode.
Yeah.
It kind of redeemed it. Like, they were still, every once in a while, a little...
Snotty.
Slightly, and then I get mad at them, and then what they do is they end up at one of their challenges, which was a drag strip. They had some new top-end Camaro, do its drag thing, and then they each handed them a different high-performance electric car.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm coughing.
We'll give you
it.
It's okay. There we go. Up to and including one of the long, funny car drag strip ones. And they were fast. So they did all that stuff. By the end of their episode, they were all like... ways to go and all that, but we're okay with electric cars. Like, I would have expected the American guys would have
poo-pooed
on it.
No, because they knew they had to do something different, because the English guys took a bad hit for that. What just pissed me off is they outright lied about the Tesla car.
Yes.
And I've seen that car I've had a Tesla pull in front of me in real life.
Yeah.
That is a sexy frickin' car.
Yes.
It is beautiful, and it sounds like a space car.
And in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
they put that video, very clever of them, where the new cars have the insane button, which takes the
governor off,
the accelerator delimiter off. And they were showing videos of people in the back seat with their phone, and they hold the phone against the other back seat, and then the car takes off, and they take their hand away, and centrifugal force, it just keeps it there.
Not
centrifugal. That's in a circle. Sorry.
Just acceleration.
Acceleration holds it there.
It's one. It means the cars accelerate faster than 1G.
One more thing we should mention. We went to the theater earlier this week.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was oohing about.
Kingsman. Yes, he's mad at me for being like, go. You saw Kingsman?
Kingsman.
Have you forgiven Mark Millar for being Mark Millar?
It is the best Millar product I've seen.
Millar gets a stay of execution.
All right. Yeah. It is. There's a couple Millar bits in there, which I could have done without.
Yeah.
But in general, you can tell that him. Sitting on top of Warren Ellis's stuff in the past gained him some common sense.
Okay.
Because it's very Warren Ellis-y in a lot of parts. But remember, you and I have been talking about the, for love of God, why can't, Incredibles was the best Bond flick in recent memory that nobody acknowledged it, because it was the super bass, the airport, it was awesome. And we said, why isn't anybody doing that? This is it. This is someone redoing the Bond flick thing for the modern age, right?
Right. And I have been watching the trailers and have been kind of...
It's big fun. Like I said, a few parts is a little weird, right?
It's delightful.
But there are a couple... And I'm okay with the message. The message is very much about class war issues and stuff like that. Yeah. Without being, sanctimonious about it.
I'll have to go watch it.
Yeah.
I like it.
There are two schools of thought about how to save the world, basically.
Well, it's just And dude, not only is there a Trading Places reference.
Okay.
Right.
An open Trading Places.
One, have you seen the movie? But then another two lines taken from Trading Places, which was an amazingly subtle thing to do in a movie like that, especially for the age group they were giving to. But that scene you do see in the trailer of the bar fight with him handing by her,
the pub fight.
That is so John Steed. It's like, you know how when you're watching old Avengers, you were hoping John Steed could actually move, and he can't, so he doesn't have any fight scenes, right? This is what if that guy
just
could move.
What
if
he could do it?
Right. Yeah. The whole fight scene is beautiful. And it's like every Avengers, and we're talking British Avengers, not American superhero Avengers. Every Avengers fight scene I had in my head as a kid.
Come to life.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the fantasy that, you know, the supreme high levels of martial art can be expressed in the style of the British gentleman.
Yeah.
It's just a really beautiful, beautiful scene.
It has one really uncomfortable, super violent scene, which is valid for the movie and not exploitive, but it's very uncomfortable. I don't want to do any spoilers. But it's uncomfortable. And it's got the weird thing where it makes, you know, some people in the audience laugh and stuff. It's like, it's not a laughing scene, right?
Yeah.
It's actually frightening. And it is, I don't know if I would be comfortable bringing my 12-year-old to see it. On the other hand, maybe I shouldn't in the first place because it's clear. It might be advertised here and there as a wacky violence movie. It's like, it's a violence movie.
Yeah. There are people dying.
Yeah.
It's you know, you have a sensitive youngster. This is not the just a cheerful, wacky thing. There's some serious issues and there is one or two scenes of fairly serious violence in it.
So. But yes, let's just say I was shocked to see Millar on the credits because I didn't know he had anything to do with it to start with.
And that's about it? Or are we going to talk about what we're playing? Anything
Anybody new? Playing anything cool?
Still in a few idle moments playing Summoners. Oh, I played, I started farting around with Planetary Explorers, which is like the spacey Minecrafty thingy. Yet another one. Boy, has that become a crowded genre all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of cool. It's still in pre-release. It's kind of neat. Though it does bring out, and it's much more beautiful, and it's voxel generated, so you just dig and it makes holes and stuff like that.
Right.
On the other hand, it does bring out a lot of what giant cubes solve, right?
Okay.
Because, visual perspective.
Yeah.
In a nice voxel-generated piece of terrain, it is very hard to tell a hole from a flat texture.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas when it's all giant cubes, you're very clear there's a hole there. I just started farting around with it, right? But it's interesting.
Very cool. You know. I haven't been playing anything exciting. Sony's money these days when it comes to their licenses has been, I'm not sure where I fall on it yet. I see the business sense of it, but I don't know if I like the game sense of it enough, which is where they've been branding other people's games.
Yeah.
So Fruit Ninja, which is still a hilarious, fun little game.
Right.
They added a Ghostbusters bit to it.
Oh, cute.
So when you swiped,
yeah,
there would be the proton beam and traps and all this. So there's now a mode built into Fruit Ninja, which is Ghostbusters-based. And for a short period of time, actually, even the front end and all that was Ghostbusters branded, and then an update, they took that off later, but left the game elements.
So they sort of almost bought an ad.
A playable ad in somebody else's game. The Pinball Arcade, recreated an old haunted house. I forget which game it was, but they basically took an old pinball machine and then updated it as if it was Ghostbusters instead, which again was fun, but it's kind of like, and every single time you kind of paid to get this extra stuff. And then last week they released Monster Dash, which is one of the first games I ever picked up for my phone because it was one of the little cute run and jump pixel art fighting monsters. You got your shotgun, shoot the monster. Hey, cute. And nobody heard hide nor hair of that thing in like years. And then all of a sudden they updated out of the blue where for $2 you could buy Peter Venkman and you make the same run with him shooting the proton pack, which is a little kind of overpowered, but for a game where it's like, it's all about your reflexes and how far you can make it and don't touch the monster and all that, shooting a weapon where the beam whips around to where, you know, it homes in on the monsters, it's like, well, for $2 it's kind of fun. But like I say, I see the business sense and I'm kind of annoyed by the game sense. It's like...
It's like what we got last night, if we would do a mech war version of Ground Pounders.
Ground Pounders.
It's like, hell yeah, we could. The engine's designed to take that stuff really easy.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah. There you go. So if anybody wants to license Ground Pounders to do a movie tie-in, please contact Chris Stewart.
Absolutely.
Anybody wants to license the pit to make a Ghostbusters game, please let me know.
Really?
I would love a Ghostbusters RPG Ghostbusters in the pit style.
Yeah, just reverse it so it's like a house.
It's a house.
You can reverse it You can make it an office tower going straight up. Right.
You can do different buildings, too.
Like yeah,
get
that's
to the
true.
Top
yeah.
of the haunted house. Get yeah. to the top of the apartment building yeah. with the rooftop temple.
Okay, we have to end now because he's going to lose his
mind. Oh!
And futzing around with a little game called Ancient Traitor, which is I was enjoying futzing around with this.
Which sport. Is on where?
Xbox?
It's on Xbox.
Xbox Indie.
Xbox Indie, yeah. Yes. Really nice front end. I liked a little music. It's got a very adapted from board game feel to it, you know, card combat and things like that, rock, paper, scissors. Yeah, just kind of interesting, an interesting little game about, sailing around in a dangerous sea and, you know, dropping in at various ports and trading things and upgrading your ship and things like that. So
I want a new trading game with lots of cities and lots of goods to trade.
And procedurally generated maps and all sorts of other things that excite me personally. But, you know, I just enjoy these...
In space, on planets.
Yes, I enjoy these kinds of games because they just, like, they put me in a Marigi frame of mind, right? Yeah. Like, this is the kind of...
What's the one we used to love back in the day? The Merchant Prince.
Merchant Prince, it's like that.
Someone remake Merchant Prince, please.
Yeah.
No.
Just because this
You're
kind
phrasing
of...
these things wrong. Somebody hire us to remake
Somebody hire us to make a Merchant Prince.
Everybody who knows us that when we want to play a
Marigi
game that
Prince,
doesn't exist,
I'm going to do.
We're
going to
go make it.
Yeah. Yes, like I said. It puts me in that frame of mind because, you know, that's the Marigi way of life. You pick up trade goods, you sell them to other people for a profit, and, you know, at every port, you know, there's some clever woman who can upgrade your ship in some interesting way. And that's just kind of how I pictured the lifestyle, so I kind of enjoy games about the Mediterranean for that reason. And that's about it.
That's it. We're out of things to talk about. We're kind of emotionally and physically exhausted. Yeah. Oh, we're not doing outro songs.
No outros.
No outro songs.
My talents are wasted. Oh, yes, they are.
So, end of episode 3. We've been keeping to the 2-week schedule. But, of course, that depends on you guys to keep talking to us, which you do on our social media.
And ask questions.
Boards. But ask questions. And actually, open up the stuff. I mean, people have been asking stuff. Questions they have about the games, which is great. A little bit about business, but, you know, whatever you're curious about, throw it out there. Yeah. And not just Kerbro specific. If there's anything, like, we kind of talked about, get your
feet. Yeah, people ask me questions sometimes, and you know, if I can answer them in this context, that is great.
The business, yeah. Or if you got stuff you want to suggest that we should check out.
Also, if there's, start asking for what other team members you want to talk to.
Yeah.
Yes. Podcast. Very good point.
Oh, we should mention the Jason show with the Jason show who did the pit rap.
Well, the show's open. Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Well, the show opened with that, so.
Yes, check out the pit.
Well, as the editor, what I will do is I'll open with a touch of it and end with the full thing.
Yay!
Okay.
And links to where people can go check it out, because it is, speaking of people who are, set up their flag on Twitch, that's where he's at. He's on Twitch TV.
Jason, you're awesome.
Oh, God.
It's the Jason Show, and he has lots of cool guests.
Why don't you just write the Jason rap, and you can perform it next time?
<That's right. clears throat> No, man. I'm not going to step on his artistic toes.
All right. So, with a little nerdy rap, that's it from us here at Curb Stomp. Chris Stewart.
Aaron Dambo.
Martin Serlis.
And we'll see you in a couple more weeks.
Bye!
Bye!
You gotta get into the pit and devil down a little bit. There's 40 levels for your nerves. Run out of anything you burned. That's it, that's just the way of the pit.
Yes, we could play the whole pit rap for you, but that would kind of rob the guy who created it of some potential new viewers. So head over to twitch.tv and search for The Jason Show, all one word, T-H-E-J, I'm not going to spell it for you, The Jason Show, all one word, no spaces. Check it out.
Socket bread, hybrid cheese, raw meat, make a sandwich. Be wary of the protein, because the proteins are caustic. Getting through the 40 levels for the final boss bit. Finally hit the level 40 before I cast it. Last it. Deciphering computer, you must level up for NG. That's if you want to cross...